Hey, and welcome to The Rod Kirby Show, the show and podcast that covers the ever-expanding world of film and entertainment. Grab your pen, paper, and get ready to take a bunch of notes, because today I'm chatting with Sanford, North Carolina filmmaker Jessica B. Smith. Jessica's film, El Rose, was under consideration for development at BET before the studio passed on the project in 2019. However, this didn't deter Jessica, as she eventually directed, produced, and starred in the film, which was released in February 2021. Jessica also adapted the film into a series that debuted on Amazon Prime in November of this year. Join us as we discuss Jessica's filmmaking journey, BET's film development process, how to successfully pitch your projects, and much more on this episode of The Rod Kirby Show. Hello, and thank you for joining me on this episode of The Rod Kirby Show. I'm your host, Rod Kirby. Good to see everyone. Glad to be here as well. Today, I've got a very special guest, Miss Jessica B. Smith. She's a filmmaker, and she's working on something pretty cool. It's a series, and that's based actually off of a movie that she did. So let's get Jessica up here to tell us all about it. Jessica, hello there.
Hey.
How's it going?
It's going great. And thank you so much for having me on the show, Rod.
Absolutely. Thank you. Now, tell me about your, you got a really cool project. You have a movie that you did called El Rose,
right.
The movie.
Right.
And now you took that movie, and now it's a series, right?
Right.
Now, what is El Rose all about?
Okay. So it started with El Rose, the movie. It is a romantic comedy, and it tells a story about two best friends who fall in love, and it's an accident. Okay. They fall in love accidentally. So what happens is they find out that a special woman in their life doesn't have too much longer to live. And listen, El Rose and Carter are bosses. Okay. They're software engineers. They're bossing in every aspect of their lives, except for when it comes to love. Mm-hmm. And they both just seem to can't get love right. So the special woman in their lives, the only thing she's ever wanted to see was both of them settled down together, bossing in an area more than just business and entrepreneurship. Mm-hmm. So they decide to fake love, right? To fake being in love to give her dying wish, but actually falling was never supposed to be part of the plan.
Right? It never is, right?
So that's the movie. The movie is it's a feel good romantic comedy. It's very clean. Okay. So PG-13, whatever. Very clean. And it basically gives you the backstory of how they fell in love and how this whole thing happened. Right.
Okay. Well, before we get into the series, let's take a look at the trailer for the movie. This is El Rose, the movie.
Okay.
All right.
What are you doing?
You need serious, serious help.
That's why I nailed the contract today and you didn't.
That's why I'm getting married tomorrow and you're not.
El Rose, a romantic comedy film.
That was mean, Carter.
I think you two would make a great team. You should consider it.
El Rose and best friend Carter pretend to be in love to give a special woman her dying wish.
Perfect gift for her. Mm-hmm. Will be the perfect gift for Gigi.
A gift? Since when did deception become a gift?
But actually falling for each other? Well, that was never part of the plan.
I realized I was in love with you.
Is that our lie?
No, it's our truth.
Carter is a whore! I know who he is, and I know how he is, and I'd have to be insane to want to be on anything with him.
Produced by Sanford's own Jessica B. Smith, El Rose.
I told you from jump, this was a very, very bad idea.
Tickets are available at Eventbrite or by visiting elrosethemovie.com.
Oh, that's so cool.
It's been a while since I've seen that. That was awesome for me.
Does it take you back to memories of production?
Yes, it did. That was amazing.
So when did you write the movie and when did you produce the movie?
I wrote it in 2018 and I produced it in, I started producing it in 2018, but it was supposed to be just the trailer. Like I was just not a trailer, more like a sizzle reel, mm-hmm. right? And so I flew out to Atlanta and met with one of the executive producers and the content programming person for BET. And I sat down with them. I pitched L. Rose. They loved it. Wow. They loved the movie idea and everything. Mm-hmm. And so they took the treatment of it. It sat in the office for 6 months. They had a meeting for 6 months. And when I finally heard back, by the time I heard back from them, it was 2019. Mm-hmm. And they passed on it, but they said they wanted to look at it. They passed on it for like the 2019-2020 season. And they wanted to look at it again for the 2020-2021 season. But I was like, no, I'm not doing this waiting game. So I said, shoot, I've gotten this far. Let me just go ahead and finish it. And so
that's awesome. So you went ahead and just produced it yourself, huh?
Yeah.
Wow. So people that are listening to the podcast, I invite you to go to our YouTube channel so you can actually see the trailer for yourself. Go to youtube.com/ I believe it's Rod Kirby, and look at the trailer in this video. And also, I want to invite everyone who's watching to watch the movie and the series. You can go to lrosemovie.com and watch it on Amazon as well to learn more about that. So tell me about this development process. So you wrote the film, you're starring in the film, and you produced the film. What was the production like? Like, what I know what drove you to actually make it, but like, what was it actually like to actually, you know, actually see your stuff coming to fruition?
Let me tell you something. That was never my intention. It was never my intention to produce it. And it was never my intention to be the lead. Okay. So let me just put that out there. That was never my intention, but that's what happened. Like I said, me producing it all came from the fact of just making that sizzle reel to meet with the executive producers. So I just said, well, Jessica, if you could get that far, you know, then surely if you keep going, you can finish this. So that's why I ended up producing it. The lead I cast for L. Rose. Okay. So I didn't write it saying, hey, I'm about to be L. Rose. I cast for L. Rose and I knew who L. Rose was in my head. And I knew she had to be, listen, I'm not tooting my own horn. Okay. So don't think that. Don't think that, y'all. But listen, what happened was I knew L. Rose had to be special. She had to be amazing because one, she's the title character. Okay. Right. It's named L. Rose. And she's the title character and she's one of the leads and she just had to be amazing. So I was casting for her. I couldn't find her. I found one. Now I already knew who was going to be Carter. Sean McMillan. He's freaking amazing. Okay. He was already cast. And so whoever I chose, she had to match him. Right. And so all the casting I did, none of the ladies were what I saw in my head, except for this one lady. But it didn't work out because of her her specs. OK, she was like 4'2" and maybe 115 pounds soaking wet, maybe. And like pairing her with Sean, who's like 6'1", and you know, it would have never worked. Like, I'm telling you, it would have never worked. And she was the only one who I would have given the character L. Rose to. So that's why I ended up becoming L. Rose. I said, well, shoot, I do a little acting, I do it myself. So that's how that happened. The actual development process, it was, so I wrote it, produced it, directed. I needed someone to be my cinematographer. I needed someone to hold the cameras, do the sound, do the lighting. Because I'm an actress and I was, you know, doing a lot of local projects, I reached out to people I network with. And I was like, hey, listen, I need a cinematographer. I need sound. I need lighting. This is my budget. This is what I can do. This is my little meager budget. This is what I can do. Can you help me? Can you mesh with my vision? And so Third Eye Multimedia, they came on. They were like, Jessica, we're going to rock with you. And then I ended up linking with another production house, Film Productions. They linked with me. So the two production houses together, we got it done. And it was an amazing. Listen, we did some guerrilla filming, okay? Like, I bet. Listen, after I waited for BET and BET passed for that season, mm-hmm. I said, okay, the wait is over. Let's go. And after that, I mean, we were filming 12, 13, 14, 15 hour days.
Wow.
On the weekends, a mm-hmm. whole Friday, a whole Saturday, half of a Sunday. We were just going at it.
How long did you shoot?
I would say maybe like after the wait, because see, you remember we had already filmed some of this to do the sizzle reel,
right?
Then 6 month wait, and then after hearing back from BET, we continued. And after that, I would say probably like I filmed probably like maybe two months.
Wow, yeah, that's impressive. Because I mean, especially, and I totally understand, you know, stretching out production time because of a smaller budget, you know, that's right. What you got to do. You know, sometimes you can't have everyone available. Sometimes people's schedules change. Sometimes the money just isn't there. So,
right.
You know, you got to shoot when you can. So I totally get that. Did you plan for that, or did it just kind of happen that way?
It just kind of happened that way. Mm-hmm. You know, like you said, especially budget. And when mm-hmm. I had like an investor, she linked on to the project. She was like, Jessica, look, I see your vision. I see where you're going with this. Here's some money. And I was like, ah. And so once the money, you know, to help with, I mean, even without the money, I was just taking what I had.
Right.
Budget, what resources were available to me. Mm-hmm. So I was never using money as an excuse not to keep going.
Right.
I would just have to tweak things, and like maybe some scene I wrote, I was like, okay, there's no way that's gonna happen, so mm-hmm. just rewrite that, different location, maybe merge these two scenes together.
Yeah.
Because remember, I didn't write it with the intention to produce it,
right?
So once I realized, yo, I'm about to produce this thing, I had to like rework some stuff to make it work within my budget. But like I said, when my investor came on and she started writing those checks,
makes a difference, don't it?
Makes a big difference. So yeah, that was
how. So when you had your, I mean, you had your writer hat on, then you had your director hat. How was that directing and acting in the same project? I mean, do you do a take and you say, you know what, I wasn't feeling it, let's do another one. You know, how did you kind of work that out?
Okay, so let me tell you, that was crazy.
Yeah.
You know, anybody who write, directs, and act, especially lead, not mm-hmm. the side character, that is crazy. That is really crazy to do. What's really great is, well, more so for the series than for the movie, because mm-hmm. Belle Rose was in a lot of scenes in the movie, right?
Mm.
So that was a little more challenging. But yeah, what I would do, I'd film it, I'd go back and watch it.
Mm-hmm.
What really helped was that I wrote it, so I already see it in my head, right? So when I was directing it, I'm trying to produce what I already saw in my head. And so then when I'm acting out what I already saw in my head. You know what I'm saying? Because sometimes, you know, let's say I wrote it and I'm directing it, but mm-hmm. I'm not the actress for it, right? So the actress, she's gonna give me, you know, her take on it and what she thinks and whatever notes I've given her. So when she does that take and I'm like, that's not quite what I was going for.
Mm-hmm.
You see what I mean? But when I'm acting myself, I already know as a director what I was going for. So I already do it. But see, what I would do is I'd go back and watch it and I go, I don't know. Let's try that again. Or I won't like the angle. You know, I'm mm-hmm. like, let's change the angle on that. I don't like, or I don't like what the camera did. Like I had an idea of what I wanted the camera to do in the moment.
Right.
But when I go back and look at it, I'm like, that was good in my head, but to actually see it, no. So let's do something different.
Yeah, no problem.
What I did find challenging was, being a director in one moment and then the actress, those are two different head spaces. You mm-hmm. know what I mean? So when you're the director, you're paying attention to what the camera is doing. You're paying attention to what, you know, all the actors are doing. You're paying attention to the scene itself, mm-hmm. the lighting. Like, you're paying attention to all those different things. So that's one headspace to be in. But when you're acting, I have to shut off the camera. I have to shut off, you know, the environment, what's going around.
Right. Yeah.
I have to fully connect with whoever's in the scene with me. I have to fully connect to the content of that scene. So jumping in and out of those different headspaces, it's challenging.
Yeah.
But I like it.
But you did it.
Yeah, I did it.
You did it. And this was your first project, right?
My first one you... project.
That's yes, like the first thing you've written and directed, and of course, you know, produced as well. But it's like your first major thing, right?
Film wise, see, I have a background in novel writing, so I have books on Amazon and stuff like that. I've been writing books for years.
Awesome.
But I started doing stage plays first locally. So I started off kind of directing stage plays and producing stage plays. They were not recorded. So there wasn't any video of it, but it was just, you know, giving the people great show. So that's the kind of background that I came out of. But this is my first film project that I produced with my name on it, wrote it. I've written some other like short films, but I didn't produce it or direct it, just, you know, write it.
So. Okay. Well, let's take a quick step back to the BET development deal. Okay. How in the world did you connect with BET?
Well, listen, okay. So Atlanta had a pitch festival going on, right? So you could go to the pitch festival and you do the workshops. You could take the different workshops, different seminars and all of that. And then on the last day of the pitch festival, you got to pitch to certain networks and stuff that were there, like Issa Rae, she was there.
Oh, wow.
She was there. Own Oprah's network, representatives from I'm telling you, just about everybody was there. Now Tyler Perry, he wasn't there, and you know, his people, they weren't there.
Right.
No, they weren't there. But I mean, just about anybody you could think almost was there. And you did not have time to pitch to everybody, so you kind of had to go ahead and zero in on who you were going to pitch to. Literally had 2 minutes to pitch. So once you sat down with them, you had 2 minutes to pitch your idea. And if they were interested, those 2 minutes suddenly got longer. And now you're exchanging contact information.
Oh, nice.
Right. And exchanging phone numbers and emails and all of that stuff. So that's what happened. I sat down and I pitched it. And what I said was like, okay, listen, I wrote this romantic comedy and it tells the story of two best friends who pretend to be in love to give a special woman in their life a dying wish, but actually falling for each other. Was never part of the plan. And they go, ooh, tell me more. I mean, that's what happened. It went just like that. And I was like, okay. So once they said, tell me more, I just started, you know. And a lot of this, because I didn't go to film school or anything like that, but a lot of this information I got it from taking Shonda Rhimes' masterclass.
Oh, nice. Yeah.
Yeah. And one thing she said with me stuck with me so good. She was like, you got to know your pitch. And the pitch is not just for executive producers. Like, even when you pitch your stuff to actors and investors, you know, and networks and studios to get them on board, that thing got to be solid. So what Shonda Rhimes said was, you got to have your pitch so solid that you could say it with the TV on. The volume so loud it's hurting your ears, with 300 children in the house, all high on sugar, bouncing around, and you're in the, and with the ambulance going down the street with the siren on 100, and with all of this commotion around you, can you still give your pitch without missing a beat? And I was like, oh, so I practiced that, and I, you know, I perfected that. So when I finally got the opportunity, I was like, look, I'm ready. Let's go.
Yeah.
Let's go.
Yeah.
So. Yeah.
Well, kudos on that, because it sounds like you know it. And I want everyone to really pay attention. You have to know your story inside and out. You know, you need to have that elevator pitch, which is what you just gave me in, you know, less than 30 seconds, which is amazing, which is great.
Yeah.
You have to have that elevator pitch in case you meet Tyler Perry on an elevator, in case you meet Oprah one day, you know, and then knowing, of course, your story inside out, so that if they press for details, you can give them those details. So that's awesome.
Yes. Yes.
So once you got through the pitch, what happened next?
So I got through the pitch. We exchanged contact information and they asked me to send them the treatment. And I was like, okay, the treatment was already ready. It was ready. It was copywritten. It had been edited, revised, sent to my other, like in my close circle, I have a close circle. So I sent it to other, film people in my close circle, and I was like, what do you think about this? So it was ready. That's the thing, like what Rob was saying, you got to be ready when the opportunity is not, you can't get ready
right
when the opportunity arises. There's this quote, it was really good, let me see, it goes like this. It says, it's better to be ready and never have the opportunity than to have the opportunity and not be ready.
There you go.
Lakeith Stanfield said that, and I was like, oh, that was good. So They gave me their contact information. I sent over the treatment. They read the treatment and they were like, this is good. Then they started CCing in the other people, you know, the higher ups, so mm-hmm. CCing it to them. They asked for the script. The script was already written, revised mm-hmm. many times. It was copywritten as well.
Okay.
And all of that. So they asked for the script and I sent the script. They was like, this is good. And then they said, we want to have your script under consideration. Mm-hmm. This happened in November, right after Thanksgiving that year. They told me, you know, holidays with Christmas coming up,
right,
years coming up. They said, just wait, because the beginning of the year is the pilot season.
Right. So
they were like, we're going to contact you after the holidays and we'll let you know what we decide. And I was like, okay. So I, you know, the waiting game
started, right,
and just waiting and waiting.
Checking your email every 5 minutes, refreshing.
Yes. And then not hearing from them. And so reaching out, like, hey, y'all didn't forget about me, right? And they're like, oh no, Jessica, we haven't forgotten about you. It's still in the room, whatever room, it's still under consideration. We're gonna be in touch. I said, okay. Mm-hmm. You know, so every like 2 to 3 weeks, I would just follow up. Mm-hmm. And then finally they sent me the email where they passed on it. For that season, but they did request to see it again for that next season. But I was like, that waiting game is, you know,
yeah,
like that was exciting. Like I know I didn't get in. I know I didn't get what I necessarily wanted in that moment, but just to even get that far, I was like,
yeah, that's impressive.
Yeah.
That's really good. Kudos to you. And I want to go back to your treatment. Cause I think, thank you so much for, you know, even just saying that you had a treatment that was ready and you had a script that was ready. Cause I want people to understand, again, you gotta be ready. You know, you have to be ready for when success comes knocking at your door or an opportunity comes knocking at your door. You know, you can't wait to get ready when people want your stuff right then and there.
Right.
So your treatment and for anyone that's watching that doesn't understand the treatment, as far as I understand it, it's really just a kind of overview of your story.
Yes.
And it has your synopsis, it has your log line, it has a character breakdown, usually has, if it's going to be for TV, usually has a little description of each episode and how the arc of the series, yeah, or the season is going to be. Mm-hmm. What was in your treatment and how did you kind of structure it?
Well, see, at the time I only had the movie. I did not have the series.
Okay.
Yeah. It didn't exist yet. It was in process, right? Mm-hmm. It was still coming together. So my treatment was basically the log line, which mm-hmm. I've already said, it was my pitch. So the log line to give you the short, like, to just pull you in. Mm-hmm. And then after that, I, you know, gave the genres, a romantic comedy. And then after that, I went into the synopsis. Just like you said, I did the overview of everything. So in the treatment, you can't hide information. See, what people need to understand is, okay, you got this movie. They don't necessarily have time to watch your movie, right?
Right, right. So
let me see it on paper, because by just looking at it on paper, I can tell if that's something I want to watch or not. That's mm-hmm. what the treatment does, you know? And for the TV, like you said, you can make a treatment for the first episode, the pilot episode, and a series Bible or a story Bible for the TV show, which is everything that Rod just said. It and people can tell, like Shonda Rhimes, when she did Grey's Anatomy, she got that off of her pitch mm-hmm. and her story Bible. I actually went and read her story Bible, and it was actually really, really good. The story Bible to Grey's Anatomy, where it basically does what we just said. It gives you the pitch, and then it gives you a summary of the show, what's going to mm-hmm. happen, breakdown of each character, and within that character breakdown the kind of arc of their individual stories, and then after that, like your future ideas for future shows, future seasons, just briefly summarize.
Mm-hmm.
And I was like, dang, Shonda, this is good. I would have wanted to produce this too.
Yeah.
So that's what was in my treatment. It was just a full breakdown of the movie, what happened. I don't want to give it away on here because, you know, some of you might go watch the movie Elrose, which I hope you do. But in the treatment, I gave away everything. I told the beginning, mm-hmm. the conflicts, the climatic moment, the resolution to the climatic moment. So in your treatment, it is not the place to hold back information of, oh no, well, I'm not going to tell them this so they got to watch it. No, your treatment, give it away in your treatment. And they'll decide, oh, this sounds good. I want to see this. This sounds good on paper. Now let me see how it looks. visually, if it's already produced. But then even if you didn't produce it, you could have something, a treatment, where that will make someone want to produce your work. They're like, oh God, this treatment is good. Yeah, we want to produce this. We're going to option this.
Absolutely. You know?
Yeah.
So. Did have you stayed in contact with them? Do they know that the series is done and out?
They know that the series is done. Well, let me tell you where I messed up.
Okay.
Let me tell you where I messed up.
Oh Lord.
Look, if you're trying to get someone to like pick up your series, you don't produce the whole thing.
Jessica.
That's what I did. I produced the whole thing. What you do is you produce the first episode. It's called the pilot, mm-hmm. right? I mean, you can produce the first episode if you want to, which I think is a really good idea. Or you can just write the first episode and try to pitch it and get someone else to produce it. But anyways, if you decide you want to put on your producer's hat and you want somebody else to pick it up, you should mm-hmm. only produce the first episode. And then they look at the first episode and they're like, okay, I see where this is going. I like this. You know, we're gonna pick this up. We're going to do this one. But me, what happened, I'm going to tell you how I ended up producing the whole series.
Okay. What had happened was.
What had happened was those locations were not cheap, okay? Mm. Curing some of those locations cost some money. Like, for example, one location was $800 a day, okay?
Sheesh. Wow.
She is correct. So, and I'm telling you, I know people might think, oh, she got a whole bunch of money. Not yet. Ooh. Not yet. Okay. So $800 a day. I said, oh no. If I'm about to pay $800 a day to film at this location, I'm gonna milk it for everything I have. So if that location only shows up once mm-hmm. in episode one, but I know it's in episode two, it's in episode three, it's in episode four. Well, guess what? While we're here,
right, there you go.
We're gonna film that scene that's in episode two, as well as that scene that's in episode three, so I can get the full bang for my buck. That's how I ended up producing the whole series. Because I was like, not $800 for that one scene. No,
right.
No.
So the movie was more of a romantic comedy.
Yes.
Now the series, it's still got those comedic elements, but it's more of a drama, right?
Yes. You just described it perfectly. So yeah, the movie has a lot of comedic moments. Okay. So if you watch it, there's times in it where you're gonna crack up really bad. You're gonna be like, man, something is wrong with Jessica. But it is more of a drama. It's mm-hmm. a lot more there's some suspense in there,
mm-hmm.
a lot of drama, real issues, real life, how people deal with it. But I help lighten it with comedic moments strategically placed throughout. So yeah.
Well, let's take a look at the trailer for El Rose, the series, okay? And we'll come back and talk about it. So this is El Rose, the series.
Okay.
CEO is allowing my company to create software that completely eradicates cancer. This is major.
Unstoppable together.
I mean, y'all already won the game.
I'm still playing. Ready.
Your company is on the brink of ascending to that next level.
Our company.
Nobody cares about curing cancer. There's more money in the treatment than the cure. If you try to cure cancer, you're playing with fire.
We pull out. Just trust me, okay? I got this.
For me, I see this as an opportunity of a lifetime. For Carter, he'll just want to see the logistics.
The size of this contract alone was enough to merit a board meeting. And you know that.
I know, that's why I was going to tell you.
When? Because apparently, I still have work to do in your company.
I built this company from the ground up. I am the company.
The woman named Ed Rose. Take care of her.
Consider it done.
What you're not gonna do is lecture me. Okay, and you're keeping secrets from your me.
Oh. I have to tell you something. It's important.
You did tell him, right?
Of course.
What the hell is this?
You got a hell of a lot to explain, and I got a hell of a lot of time.
Go back to your billion-dollar company, iWise. Go back to your tax brackets. Go back to your side of the city.
If you can't hit the head, you hit the heart. And whoever's developing the software is the heart.
Cannot know about.
Well, hey, El Rose, good to see you.
You know,
This is gonna get you killed.
Right.
Better think fast, homie.
No more secrets.
No more secrets.
All right. Woo! Elro's a series. Looks exciting. Awesome. So with the series, how was production different from the movie? How long did you shoot? And did you use the same production companies?
I use only one production company.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, I'm still here. I'll use only one production company. Well, no, I didn't, too. But if I use Torch Film Productions, and closer to the end, about 75% through, I had to bring on another production house to help us finish out this thing, and I finished it out with Pro U Production. Ajale, she was absolutely amazing to work with. She was like, I want to blend with what you've already done so well that you can't even tell that, you know, another production house came on board. So I ended up using two for this one as well. Yeah, just to finish it out, to finish strong.
So what's dramatic elements of the story, what's different in the plot of the series from the movie?
Okay, so with the movie, it just tells the story of how the two leads fell in love, how they ended up together. It's important. Mm-hmm. It's important to the series. Now, look, you could go watch the series without watching the movie and you'll be fine. Like, you don't have to have the movie to follow the series, but to better understand the characters,
right,
it's a good idea. Because the reason why is because in the series, it deals a lot with deception, right? Mm-hmm. And not deception for the simple purpose to deceive, but because of, you know, different dynamics going on within the minds of the characters. So, and that deception started in the movie when two best friends fake a romance.
Right.
So that seed of deception was planted already there. And there's a pottery scene in the movie that's so good where the pottery, I don't want to give it away. But anyway, so the deception thingy kind of starts in the movie, but it's more fleshed out in the series. And then another thing is, okay, so in the movie we see Elle Rose is so business-minded, like her number one goal is business, get it done. And now she's married, but she's still so business-minded.
Right.
And now it's like, girl, you know, and she doesn't know how to quite get to that place yet. And then in the movie, what you'll learn is one of the reasons why Elrose didn't want to fall in love with her best friend is because he's a bit of a ladies man. Okay. Mm. He struggles with that. And now you and this guy, you're together. And it's like, now Elrose is scared. Like, am I about to be boo-boo the fool? Like, you know, is this past truly over, or am I about to, you know, be looking real stupid? And now in the series, you got this temptation, mm-hmm. and it's like, Carter, are you going to bend to the temptation, or is that truly something in your past, something that you're beyond now? So,
Wow. So how long did it take you to produce the series, and because let me back up for a second. How long from the time that you finished the movie to the time that you actually released the series? Because the series is brand new. You just released this on November 12th of this month, right?
Yes. So the movie released in, like, I'm not mistaken, in February, somewhere around Valentine's Day, because you know,
of this year.
Yes. Of 2021. Yeah. But before it released online, streaming through Amazon, it was at theaters locally. Okay.
Okay.
Local run through the local theaters here in North Carolina.
Okay.
And so after the local theater run, it released in around Valentine's Day.
Mm-hmm.
Hold on, excited. It released around Valentine's Day.
Which I think is pretty good for two friends kind of faking romance, right, on Valentine's Day. It's nice.
Mm-hmm. And so that was in February, and then come November, the series released. Now, see, you got to understand this. When I finished writing the movie, the series was like, hey, these characters have more story. Like, Jessica, get on that computer and start typing. There's more story. So I was like, oh, there is more story. So I'm just typing. So by the time I was in the middle of producing the movie, the series was already written.
Oh, wow.
So, I was letting the actors know there's a series to this, you know. Mm-hmm. There's a series to this. So, you know, so they knew there was a series to this, but they had no idea what it was about or any of that. Yeah, so it was already written. Mm-hmm. And then before the movie released, I was already producing the series.
Hmm.
Yes. So the movie, it premiered in theaters in January, but that November, before that January, that mm-hmm. November, I was already producing the series.
Really? So you kind of had, you had your hands full, Jessica. So you did the movie, and then before the movie release, you were actually in production with the series.
Yes.
Wow. And how was that experience? Was it a little bit smoother since you had did the movie already? Or did you experience a lot of bumps and ups and downs too?
We produced through the pandemic. See, now when I produced the movie, there was no pandemic. There was no mask. There was no COVID-19. Mm-hmm. There was no vaccinations.
Right.
None of that, right? So, boom. So it, but there was like, that was my first film experience. Mm-hmm. So it was trial, error, oops, mistake, won't do that again. Learn, learn from that. Oh man, it was like a crash course in film. I loved it, right? Because like I said, I didn't go to school for film. I did go to school for creative writing. So I do have a master's in creative writing and a master's in English, but I did not go to school for film. So my first film project was a complete learning experience for me. Mm-hmm. And of course, to film the series, I took everything that I had learned from filming the movie and applied it to filming the series, which did make things a lot more smoother.
Right.
But challenging was filming through a pandemic.
Yes.
That was a complete total nightmare. I don't know how else to put it. You could have the film day set in stone, the location squared away, the production house ready to go, and the day before filming, one of the actors reach out, Jessica, I just started this cough.
Or, oh Lord.
My nose literally just started running, and I'm like, oh my God. And then the whole day shut down, like all that shit. And that happened a number of times. I'm telling you to keep mm-hmm. going. It was a push because everything in me was like, Jessica, just now's not the time. You bit off more than you can chew. You move too quickly. But then I was like, no, I'm this far in and I'm gonna keep going. But I did pause production. It took me 9 months to film a series.
Wow.
We started in November and we finished in August. And the reason why it took that long is because in December, I shut it down. So December, mm-hmm. January, February, no filming. So really, it would have took me 6 months to film it. Mm. But probably would have took me less than that if it wasn't for the pandemic. But it took me 6 months to film the series. I shut down filming for 3 months because mm-hmm. everybody was getting sick on me. Two of my actors caught COVID, not on set.
Hmm.
But they ended up calling me and saying, hey, I tested positive. And I'm like, what?
Mm, wow. Yeah.
That was a nightmare. Yeah.
Yeah. I had to push back a shoot for a short film. We started producing it in April and I had to push it back to October just to finish it. So yeah, I totally understand.
Yeah. Yeah. It was crazy.
What was the biggest lesson that you learned throughout all this? I mean, this is your first time. I mean, really, Jessica, you, like you said, it's a crash course in filmmaking, and you went from making a movie to making a series. Yeah. What was the biggest lesson that you've learned in filmmaking, whether it be writing, directing, acting, or producing? What's the biggest thing that you've learned throughout all this?
Can I give you one with the different hats?
Sure, go right ahead.
All
right,
let's see. As a director, one of the biggest things I learned is to not have your people talk so much. A lot of times we try to, let me back it up. As a writer, I learned to not have your characters talk so much.
Mm. And
the story is so much more potent when you tell it through subtext. And mm-hmm. subtext is what was not said.
Right.
Mm. So a lot of times when I'm guiding other writers, I say, look, try this. When you write the scene, first, write it without any dialogue. What could you do? How could you use the environment? How could you use the actors? How can you use the room? How could you use it to show the story that you want to tell, right?
Mm-hmm.
So do that first. And that's hard. That is not easy to do. But it forces you to think outside of the box of blah, 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 right?
Right.
And then I tell them, after you write the scene like that, now go back in and add the dialogue that's needed. Because a lot of times they talk too much. Characters talk too much. Right. That was one of the biggest lessons I learned as a film writer, because I come from novel writing. As a director, the biggest thing I learned as a director is a couple things. One, work in the time for your dailies, okay? Dailies is watch the playbacks, watching it. There are things that you would catch in your dailies that if you watch them, you will say, oh my God, no. You know, but then if you don't watch it later on, when you got all this footage and you're looking at it and you're like, oh my God, I did that every single take. Oh my God. Now, you know, so I learned that, watch your dailies. I also learned that a lot of times as a director, especially new directors, because I was a new director, you go in thinking, you're going in to tell the people what to do, right? What to do, to tell, you know, tell them what to do. But a lot of people, especially new directors, don't realize that you also supposed to tell the camera what to do. Right? And a lot of people don't know how, they don't know what to tell the camera to do. They don't know how to tell the camera what to do. So they're thinking, all I need is the camera to sit there and film the scene. Really? You know, because there's different things that you can have the camera. Like, for example, you could say, you know, for this scene, I want the camera to go like this across the scene, right? I want it to start here and, you know, go across the whole scene, you know, and to be thinking from the camera lens to not only tell the actor, I want you to come in, I want you to lay on the couch, fluff the pillow, and then get up and walk here, but to tell the camera while he's doing that, I want you to move here and then focus in on that object, because that object is so important.
Right.
You know what I mean? So as a director, watching your dailies, knowing how to tell the camera what to do, not just the actors. Oh God, and the sound. The sound. I don't know.
Just as important as the camera.
Somebody put sound in bold and underlined it 100 times. Like,
right.
Man, sound like killed me in the movie, I'm trying to tell you. But like I said, it was a learning experience. Mm-hmm. So when I came around to do the series, I was like, oh, no. let's make sure the sound is right.
Right.
That's as a writer, as a director. And I would say as a producer, a lot of people think they need money. And producers, you do need money. Listen, I'm not going to say you don't need money. However, what I'm going to say is if there's something you really want to do, do not let the lack of money stop you from doing it. Mark Harris, he's a filmmaker, and I follow him and I listen to a lot of his interviews on Film Courage. And one thing he said, and I was like, "Woo, Mark, you better preach." He said, filmmakers want people to give them money to go produce XYZ. But he said, nobody should invest in you more than you invest in yourself. Right? So it's like, how much of your money are you going to put on the table? How much of your money are you going to put in this? And if you go, well, I don't have any money to put in it. Well,
right.
Maybe pick up another job, do a side hustle, something. Like, you might not make all the money that's needed, but just to say, hey, look, I put up my $500, right? And $500 might not sound like anything, but to some people, $500, that might be your rent or, you know, whatever. So just doing whatever you have to do to say, here, I'm going to put, this is what I have, and this is what I'm going to put into it. And I'm telling you, as a producer, I learned that when you start using the resources that are available to you and doing what you can with what you have, doors begin to open for you. Now I have people coming to me saying, hey, Jessica, I want to invest in your next project. Let's talk numbers.
Wow.
And that was just me just using... Look, I had $1,000, and even that $1,000 was ouch, okay? Like, to put $1,000 to that filmmaking, I was like, oh my God. But I had $1,000. I took my $1,000, put it in. My $1,000 was not enough to make that movie.
Yeah.
But doors begin to open. Like, you know, people will be like, here, Jessica, here, you know, because when they see you making moves with what you have, like, people begin to take notice and want, not all, but the ones that matter will take notice and begin to help lift you up. So,
wow.
Lessons.
Girl, you are preaching in here, okay?
I'm not a preacher on this God-Hermit show.
Wow. Yeah. Well, look, that's thank you so much for sharing all that. That's incredible. I'm so excited to for you and all your success. And it's so encouraging to see someone who, you know, you have a creative background, but you didn't necessarily have a film background. Right. And you kind of parlayed what you knew into what you wanted to do. And that's right. Incredible. You know, so that's so encouraging. I want everyone, if you're watching right here on YouTube or if you're listening on the podcast, I want you to go to lrosethemovie.com to check out her film and check out her series. You can also find her on YouTube. And I believe that's it's L Rose, the series on YouTube, right?
Yes.
L Rose series on YouTube. And I believe you can find her and follow her on Facebook as well. Yes. Here you are. That's at L Rose, the movie on Facebook for everything L Rose. Jessica B. Smith, thank you so much for joining us today on The Rod Kirby Show. You can also follow me and connect with me at rodkirby.com. And you can also watch the show or listen on Spotify, on Apple Podcasts, and as well as Google and everywhere you get your podcasts. You know where you guys like to listen and all that. So thank you so much for watching today. Thank you again. It's Jessica B. Smith.
Definitely
bring you back on so we can talk to you again. And hopefully next year, you're going to have that lucrative $1 million contract with BET for the series and for the movie. They're going to redo everything, and you're going to have it all on BET. You heard it right here first.
Yes, and I receive it. Thank you, Rod Kirby. Thank you so much for having me on your show. I look forward to coming back again, and this has been an awesome experience.
Thank you, Jessica. Everyone, take care. We'll see y'all next time, okay?
Bye.
Thank you for listening to this episode of The Rod Kirby Show. I want to invite you to check out my YouTube channel and connect with me on Facebook, where I post exclusive content to keep you inspired on your screenwriting and filmmaking journey. Check the show notes for links. Thanks again for listening, and I'll talk to you soon.